a little bit of HTML so that can be navigated separately. So a user can navigate all the relationships. Okay, do I have another user interface? This is the user interface. This is the TKI metadata editor. It looks extremely clunky. It is, but it's a lot. It's complete and quite sophisticated. And well, part of the metadata system. Well, this is workflow for metadata. It's a separate thing. This website has two separate teams, one team producing the content and the other team producing metadata. You can see there the identifier. Hey, this is a URL. Every time it's a URL, when it gets this form gets submitted, we basically issue a GET on the URL, and we don't let them continue if we get a 404 if there's any other problem. Just as an example. well, format PDF. Some of them. This is a bit clunky, but some of them. Unfortunately, yes, we are not connected. Classification is driven by a thesaurus. So if you click on classification here, this is frame. Here. You get to navigate a tree of terms, of related terms. So you can do a quick find as soon as it's loaded, can do a quick find on a given term. So that helps the metadata editors navigate around an existing tree of terms, an existing thesaurus, and find the ideal term for the element. Same with keywords. That's a lot nicer to see it in action, I know. But don't have connection here. Contributor, they're all similar. Rights, name, contact, availability, coverage. Yeah, these are all free text fields, unfortunately. Well, not much that I can show you without a connection. Okay, back here. Browsing. Okay, why do we put metadata? It's a lot of effort to put metadata to attach metadata. It's really costly. I mean, that is something that's real. You cannot generate quality metadata on the cheap. Not today, at least. Not until we teach computers how to think and how to classify metadata. Content. So we have to do something useful. One of the most useful things is to provide very powerful browsing and navigation for websites. something that we have built several implementations of is Yahoo-style directories that are, in fact, driven by thesauri and control value lists. Transparently, they look like a directory, but the same resources appear in all the places where they are relevant. And indeed, the navigation is only generating a search query behind the scenes. This is the case of the e-government website, the New Zealand e-government website. your information architect will love you for this. You have to you have to sit down with the information architect and say, if we use metadata, we can have polyhierarchies. Not very meaningful to me, but they'll fall in love with it. Or faceted classifications, they seem to get really excited about this. And you can build a semantic web on top of it, because with any, either with a result set or when looking at a particular resource, you can say, find me more like this. Because, I mean, as part of your navigation, you have, let's say, this is a particular news item or any type of resource, an article or a book, chapter, or section. And the link there at the top reads, find more like this. And you can generate an instant query, or more on this subject, or following these keywords. So you can link things around quite a bit. The other step, the other important step, is searching. Both for browsing options and for searching, I strongly recommend the Polar Bear book as a way to trying to approach and understand what information architects are after. It's Information Architecture, second edition, published by O'Reilly. I think it's Peter Morville and somebody else, but I don't remember now. Very, very good book. And not all of it relevant to this problem, but a good half of it very relevant to browsing and searching using metadata. well, when we are searching, the interesting thing is that once we have metadata, we probably have control values list, and we have other schemes. We have the SRI around, and we have many other tools around, and we have validators for different schemes. So whenever a user types something on a free text, on a text box, and clicks on search, we can do many, many, many things. And the standard, the useful approach is to say, is the word that the user has typed, is that something I know about? After you dropped, I don't know, quotes, or you separated your phrases and whatnot, or dropped your ands and stop words, is it a word that I have in any of my thesauri or control values list? And if it is, what element is it likely to be found in? So when you search for advertise, in the government website, you will see, I have it somewhere. Okay, I just run a search for advertise, right? And it is offering, it has found it, and it is not a preferred term, it's a non-preferred term. Now the preferred term, I believe, is advertising. So it does offer. It says you, to be more specific, you should search for advertising. You click there, you get it. There's a more general, there's a broader term that is marketing, and there are two related terms. One is signage, and sponsorship. Anyway, it's run the search for us, One interesting thing is that I can show you, we can see, hopefully, in the source of the page, the user has typed advertise. Can everybody read it? And this has been, advertise has been run against the thesaurus, but the actual search against the search system has been advertise or publicizing. That's the preferred term. Publicizing is the preferred term, right? And so it actually turned it into search for publicizing. Okay? That is the search that was actually run against the metadata system. Okay? And that is why we got our first hit has been find information on State Services Commission, which is this resource, right? Which is something about State Services Commission. But if I show you the metadata record for it, which is this one, we will find that it's part of, not there. Then why has it been chosen? It used to be there. Should be one of the subjects. Okay. It should be. If this worked properly. Now we should be seeing public sector publicizing. Okay. Not there anymore. It was there. Publicizing. Okay. Oh, well. Okay. Okay. Let's see. What do we use for search backend? That project we didn't build the search backend. Some other another company did it, and they used their own proprietary tools based on Java. In terms of open source tools, we've been looking long and hard for useful for capable tools. We are right now exploring the use of Lucene, which is a Java-based search engine. Which is now associated with the Apache project, with all the Java project associated to the Apache project. In particular, has very, very powerful field options and has strong Unicode support. For us, dealing with several languages, that is a key feature. HTDig, unfortunately, doesn't have a strong field search and doesn't have a strong Unicode support. We haven't tried Swish and its variants, Nogo Search, Sapien. There are many search engines. You can always feed them as long as they have strong field support and they support logical operators and parentheses. You can implement metadata search with them. One important factor is that you probably want them to be Unicode compliant if you're going to be using them. We have gone a long way building RDBMS-based search systems, and it's impossible to maintain. It gets really, really, really hard to maintain. We've had good performance, but a lot of headaches with them. A lot of effort, really, and you start finding scalability issues. And it grows extremely complex. So it's good. It's good to use a search engine for a search backend, not try and build it on top of your storage on your database.
With those indexes and queries, did you?
I'll show you. I haven't been showing. There are plenty of nodes storage. There are plenty of nodes in each of these slides. I think what you're asking is here. This is the show tables from a MySQL implementation, right? You can see that we have implemented dates separately. Terms, we have identifiers, which must be unique, as that's different from all the others. Terms, which usually refers to things that are related to a control value list or a thesaurus. And text, which is usually pretext. It is pretext. And this pair, this is really there's the link table and the actual feature table. The feature table contains the value. The link table just it's a intermediate table to have a many-to-many relationship. There are two ways to build a hierarchy here. One is you can use the DC relation. It's part of, or has part, or is related to. And from the point of view of the database or the storage, it's not there. Higher level logic can follow all the relationships. Yep, indeed. The government website, the New Zealand government website, makes extensive use of the DC relation elements. Makes extensive use of them. Indeed, you can see. For more information, see are all records that are related. It's related to. The reason why they appear here is because there has been a search for any record. We find record A, and then we issue a subquery that says, show me any other records that say that are related to record A. Okay, that's how we populate this list. So yeah, it's we just use Dublin Core and then we run queries against it.
Right, just trying to understand that a bit further. Can you use Dublin Core to relate between keywords, like if you have a hierarchical?
No, keywords are related inside the thesaurus. And we use the thesaurus as a relatively external tool. But the metadata records can indicate that this resource is related to this other resource.
Okay. But between keywords, are there different kinds of relationships? Or
there between keywords, there are different kinds of relationships. Usually the relationships are either preferred term, narrow term, or preferred and non-preferred term, directions, exactly. Narrow term, broader term, and a neutral one that is related term. Mm-hmm. Okay? But that is within the thesaurus. And one of the things I always try is not to re-implement that particular wheel. So we use existing thesaurus software. And we usually import it into an SQL database and try. It's simple enough, the structure is simple enough that you can import it into a database for ease of use, for accessibility, to have it accessible from your code. But it's not the same as relating the records themselves. But the relationships between the terms are very useful to build directories,
like
Yahoo and such. You go from very broad terms, and you go digging down to narrow terms.
How do you present the difference between sort of narrower slash broader term and like related term to a user browsing?
Well, when the user is browsing, the first level sees broad terms. So you go to Yahoo and you see computers. And you click on computers and you'll see internet and now the relationship there is that, let's say, internet and this and that and hardware and software are all narrower terms. It's not really not exactly like this, but it's between a top level category and to the lower level category. The trick is how to show different types, different let's say words, terms belonging to different schemes or different thesauri. Because you may want to cross keywords with something else coverage.
Yeah, like in our application, we classify those by topic and by country.
Exactly. Well, you start crossing fields.
Yeah.
Here, fields are elements. Now, instead of having three or four fields, here we can easily have 18 or 20 elements. Gets rather tricky from the point of view of user interface. There's where you, on how to show it to to the end user, you really need an information architect to play ball with.
Have you used any artificial intelligence tools for the extraction of metadata from text?
No, we do come up, depending on the particular implementation, we sometimes do come up with scripts that generate, let's call it, interesting views. Maybe if you build all the possible paths following all the relationship of all the term relationships, you end up with a very wide forest of, you know, you can see it as a very complex decision tree, and we cut it down. We for instance run Perl scripts over it, and we cut it down to the meaningful branches, so as to show less. Excuse me?
You cut it down automatically to meaningful branches?
Yeah, we cut down branches that have very few hits or that don't seem to be meaningful. But that depends on the rules that we know are applicable to a particular project.
So
it's very hard to make it into a general
but you're not applying a statistical basis for it. You're not doing Bayesian analysis or any type of statistical analysis of the index.
Yeah, and you do need a lot of knowledge of the existence of the data you'll be dealing with. You might want to say, okay, anything that has less than 3 or 4 records is not relevant, so we cut those branches. So as to simplify navigation, it's a valid point, but maybe the nature of your users or the nature of your content means that that will be a bad choice.
How expensive is the metadata selection process? There's a lot of overhead, maintenance overhead.
From a human point of view.
But from the human point of view, how expensive is the actual metadata extraction process?
It all depends on the approach. We do quite a bit. By the time when we are creating something that is related on this facility, there's a team of 6 people working full time, they generate it. Like, I guess, like old time Yahoo team that were organizing links into categories and this and that. And as soon as they choose a URL, we pre-populate, we run a Perl script, we take as much from the page as we can and we pre-populate it to save time. It's still between creation, QA, you know, different approval, workflow, this and that. It's quite costly, but I don't know how much, because I don't run that. I'm not in charge of that part of the operation.
Well,
I build the software.
You have a team of people, so you have multiple salaries on a full-time basis. So you're talking hundreds of thousands of dollars.
Well, yes. For that project, it's one of the intended purposes to track educational resources worldwide for the benefit of the New Zealand. For the benefit of New Zealand schools.
Just rough and in order of magnitude, guess the size of the text base in gigabytes or terabytes or whatever.
Excuse me?
You're extracting metadata,
yep,
and putting it into this system. That metadata is coming out of a text base. How much text? How big is the text base?
We are.
When you extract metadata from text,
From a web page.
From web pages.
Yeah.
How many web pages are you extracting data from? Or what is the size of, in bytes, the total text that you are going through the processing?
Right now, the total number. We have probably about 10,000 records today on this system.
Okay.
This other system, the government portal was done in a different manner. It was distributed. Each government department is responsible for their own metadata records, and it has roughly 20,000 today.
You have like 20,000 entries of metadata.
In this system. Yep.
Metadata keywords?
No. Records. Records. Records.
Okay.
In terms of keywords, there's usually one part-time librarian to maintain it. But at any rate, for this website, the New Zealand government has a whole committee managing their. They have two subjects of New Zealand and functions of New Zealand. They are called. And they publish it every 2 or 3 months. They publish an update, big fat book.
Well, you started your talk today by alluding to the desirability to have the computer think about this and do the process according to the actual metadata. I think that's what you said. So the computers can't do this yet because they can't.
We all wish.
What do you wish for if you had the ability? What would you want to do for you?
I don't think. I'm not expecting computers to be able to do this, to actually create metadata. My wish, it's a lot simpler, and it's probably better education, better librarianship education for future generations. Right. If kids today in school are trained in organizing information, right, in labeling information, in using control values and using the SRI and understanding what a related term is and what a narrower and broader term is, there will be a lot better producers of content and a lot better researchers. Right. Anyone with this kind of with understanding of these concepts approaches Google in a whole different way, completely different way. And I approach content creation when I sit down and blog something, I approach it in a very different way. Okay. I know my title. I want to be found, and I want to be found when I'm relevant.
So, what do you think the answer is? With the human being being the public?
I think it's the only way, but we all do it. We all arrange our email into many folders. How many emails do you receive per day? How many folders do you arrange it in? That should be. You know, kids are taught study techniques, study skills. Why not? I mean, email organization, file organization techniques. If we have that, the costs of creating quality metadata drop. Because everybody, I mean, librarianship is an art, but the basic skills are pretty straightforward, I believe. And it's just like study aids, I guess, you know, to that level. Nobody needs to be an expert reader, fast reader, nobody needs to be the best abstract or summary writer, but we all need it a little bit. And if I had a wish, I would say, probably across the board, primary school, secondary school, well, tertiary, we're already too late, probably. But a little bit of librarianship and information organization and retrieval skills for everybody. Any questions? I do have a couple more slides, but it's really... I think we've been through most of it, and I've gone over a tiny wee bit. No, there was just one more slide that was about external feeds, and I've already mentioned you have to be ready to have external feeds. They may be RSS, they may be something else, but you will need to support, as I said. I referred to before, you will need to support metadata for objects that you're not managing themselves. Metadata that basically has a reference to an external thing, probably a URL. That is very, very common. Happens often enough that the trick sometimes with managing external feeds is versioning them and that kind of thing, but really not worth it for a first version at any rate.
How would you support in any applications you're aware of, do people share SRI like across different organizations, like say government of New Zealand wants to share resources with UK government, like,
practical approach? In terms of the SRI, people would have to agree on a SRI, or at any rate, find the lowest common denominator. I think it's very cultural. I think that's. If we could consolidate the different SRI, it would be great, and it would be so terrible at the same time.
Yeah,
because we all have different things to say, don't we?
Yeah. I was thinking about, do you use a URI to represent a particular SRI term? Like, if you were sharing...
To refer to it, maybe.
Is that a unique identifier for a SRI?
If it's published, probably would make sense.
Yeah.
Yep. If it's published in a URL, or URI, yeah. Could be a difference. Any other questions? Enjoyed it. It's that can be navigated separately. So a user can navigate all the relationships. Okay. Do I have another user interface? This is the user interface. This is the TKI metadata editor. It looks extremely clunky. It is, but it's a lot. It's complete and quite sophisticated. And well, part of the metadata system. Well, this is workflow for metadata. It's a separate thing. This website has two separate teams. One team producing the content, and the other team producing metadata. You can see there the identifier. Hey, this is the URL. Every time it's a URL, when it gets this form gets submitted, we basically issue a GET on the URL, and we don't let them continue if we get it for if there's any other problem. Just as an example. well, format PDF. Some of them. This is a bit clunky, but some of them. Unfortunately, yes, we are not connected. Classification is driven by a thesaurus. So, if you click on classification here, this is frame. Here. You get to navigate a tree of terms, of related terms. So you can do a quick find as soon as it's loaded, can do a quick find on a given term. So that helps the metadata editors navigate around an existing tree of terms, an existing thesaurus, and find the ideal term for the element. Same with keywords. That's a lot nicer to see it in action, I know, but don't have connection here. Contributor, they're all similar. Rights, name, content, availability, coverage. Yeah, these are all free text fields, unfortunately. Well, not much that I can show you without a connection. Okay, back here. Browsing. Okay, why do we put metadata? It's a lot of effort to put metadata to attach metadata. It's really costly. I mean, that is something that's real. You cannot generate quality metadata on the cheap. Not today, at least. Not until we teach computers how to think and how to classify metadata. Content. So we have to do something useful. One of the most useful things is to provide very powerful browsing and navigation for websites. something that we have built several implementations of is Yahoo-style directories that are, in fact, driven by thesauri and control value lists. Transparently, they look like a directory, but the same resources appear in all the places where they are relevant. Indeed, the navigation is only generating a search query behind the scenes. This is the case of the e-government website, the New Zealand e-government website. Your information architect will love you for this. You have to sit down with the information architect and say, if we use metadata, we can have polyhierarchies. Not very meaningful to me, but they'll fall in love with it. Or faceted classifications, they seem to get really excited about this. And you can build a semantic web on top of it. Because with any, either with a result set or when looking at a particular resource, you can say, find me more like this. Because, I mean, as part of your navigation, you have, let's say this is a particular news item or any type of resource, an article or a book, chapter, or section, and the link there at the top reads, find more like this. And you can generate an instant query, or more on this subject, or more on following these keywords. So you can link things around quite a bit. The other step, the other important step, is searching. Both for browsing options and for searching, I strongly recommend the polar bear book as a way to trying to approach and understand what information architects are after. It's Information Architecture, second edition, published by O'Reilly. I think it's Peter Morville and somebody else, but I don't remember now.